If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Chances are, if you're a millennial around my age, you've at one point in your life enjoyed a classic video game. The nostalgia of playing a retro-style pixel game just unlocks many warm memories and feelings. In this episode, I interviewed Zhu Edisham, the lead developer and pixel artist for the upcoming indie hit Berserk Boy, a game that is not only inspired by this golden age of video games, but seeks to pay homage to it as well. Welcome to Those Who Play Create, the podcast that explores the stories, ideas, and inspirations for some of the gaming industry's best. Today on the show, we have a very special episode. Joining me all the way from Japan is the creator, lead dev, and artist for the soon-to-be hit indie game of 2022, Berserk Boy, Zhu Edisham. How you doing today?
Cheers for having me, mate. Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks very much.
Yes. For everybody that's listening in, Zhu is live from Japan right now, and I am stateside. So the time zone difference between us while we're doing this interview is hilarious. So I am drinking a lot of coffee, and I think it's like probably close to the end of the workday for you?
Yeah, it's actually only 4:30, so it's really good for me, but not so good for you. So I appreciate that again.
Oh, yeah. No problem at all. So before we get started on the interview, I just have a couple of quick housekeeping items that I like to go over. Here at Those Who Play Create, we love to hear from our listeners about the interviews I conduct, games that you would like me to cover, any general feedback on the show. So feel free to email me at thosewhoplaycreate@gmail.com, and I'll make sure that I answer your questions in a timely manner. So now that that bit of housekeeping is out of the way, let's kick off the interview. Just to start, so Zhu, for those who are listening that might not be familiar with you or your work, could you give us a little bit of background on who you are, how you got started in the industry, and how did you get to where you are today as a creator and a game dev?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm the lead developer and pixel artist and animator at Berserk Boy Games, as you said. In terms of how I got into the industry, I was mainly just an artist on projects, but I always made prototypes in the background with game development tools for as long as I could remember. So around 3 or 4 years ago, I formed Berserk Boy Games and started Berserk Boy as my first commercial title, where I'm leading not just the art, but the design aspect too. So it's a pretty new one for me doing Berserk Boy.
That's awesome. And so speaking of Berserk Boy, that will be our focus of this interview today, since like you mentioned, you spent the last few years working on it. So a quick synopsis for everybody who is not familiar. In the game you play as Kay, a young, inexperienced rookie who's part of a resistance. Kay is exposed to a mysterious orb energy and transformed into Berserk Boy. And he's got to use his newfound powers to defeat Dr. Genos and save the planet. So my first question is, at first glance, while doing some early research for this episode, the one thing that I noticed is that the game borrows some inspiration from classic retro style pixel art games. And it really puts a modern twist on those. In an article I actually read, you mentioned that the game was inspired by Sonic Colors and then various entries into the Mega Man franchise. So when doing early prototyping and creative work for Berserk Boy, what was it about this style of retro gaming that was so appealing to you?
Yeah, so with Mega Man and Sonic, they're my first memories of video games in general. Not just Sonic and Mega Man, Pulse Man and Rocket Knight and just all the Sega and early Nintendo games. Okay. But Yeah, the decision to make it look like a game you can imagine on the Game Boy Advance or a Mega Drive was a design choice at the start of production. I just basically love how streamlined those games are. You know, like you can just pick up and play a Game Boy Advance game and a Mega Drive game. So like, yeah, I think I just naturally gravitated towards those projects as inspiration. And yeah, I just want to make a game like that where you can just pick it up, play it, razz through it, and like have a great time.
Yeah, and you get the feel from that just by checking it out. Like when I first saw it, my first impressions were, I was like, this very much reminds me of Mega Man X, like in a very nostalgic way. I got those feelings right off the bat. So I'm super excited for the full release later this year. My next question, do you see Berserk Boys sort of paying homage to the classic era of gaming on like Sega and Super Nintendo?
Yeah, like 100%. I'd say it leans more towards Sega and the Game Boy Advance, just because like those are the games that I just like really remember. I remember like really trying to make sure, like you said, like when you first look at it, that it visually looks like something you could imagine on those consoles. Yeah, but it's super important that like there's a lot of like modern quality of life changes in terms of like gameplay. So, you know, like the auto saves and like accessibility and stuff like that. So yeah, definitely a homage.
Okay, that's cool. So like, you know, as we mentioned, Berserk Boy was like heavily influenced by Sonic Colors and the Mega Man series, both games which in interviews you've said you've held to pretty high regards, you know, having stated that they're both favorite franchises of yours. So my next question for you is, when creating a game like Berserk Boy, that in its own way paying homage to like classic games of yesterday, what were some of the absolute must-have elements that needed to make it into the final game to preserve the nostalgia of a good 8-bit pixel style game, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think this answer is going to be like different for everyone, but one of the main things for me is definitely like just how it visually looks. You know, I think a lot of artists who work with pixel art reference older pixel art games. So if, like you said, if you feel that feeling of nostalgia when you look at it, and I feel that's something I always want to hit. And I like it when people say, oh, it reminded me of a Sega game, it reminded me of a Nintendo game. But like one of the other main things is having that feeling of being able to pick it up and play and not like 1,000 daunting tutorials. Like you can put it down, you can pick it up, and then you can actually like finish the game without feeling like, oh, I need to set aside 30 or 40 hours to complete this game. So nice and streamlined like the old games, I guess.
Okay. And then on the other side of the coin, how do you ensure that, you know, Berserk Boy or other retro style projects you've worked on that have these heavy influences stay fresh while being appealing to both like newer and older gamers? So people that are very used to this, like, you know, they grew up with this, there's a nostalgia factor, and then newer gamers who aren't as familiar.
That's a really good question, because like I actually think about this a lot when it comes to like pixel art as well. You know, a lot of young artists who have like no nostalgia attached to pixel art, like, you know what I mean, like how are they liking the older stuff? I just don't get it. But in terms of video games and like getting a newer and older audience to play the games comfortably, I guess it's like we mentioned before, modern quality of life changes, you know, like no passwords to get your save files, and like making sure the game isn't insanely unfair, lots of QA accessibility options. And I know a lot of games these days are like blending the two worlds, like modern and retro. So like Eastwood is a new one that just recently came out that has like all that dynamic lighting with the 2D sprites. And then like Octopath Traveler has the 3D backgrounds and the 2D pixel art. So like, yeah, I don't know. I guess people are just like keeping it spicy, but still paying respects accordingly. I guess they're just like taking what's good from modern games and putting it into the older games.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, now that you can do something about, like, obviously you love the games that you grew up with. Everybody holds those games to high regard. It's like you have the opportunity now, if you could make certain tweaks here and there, you know, that's what you're going to do now.
Yeah, 100%.
So it's more things like everything in the background. That's pretty cool. I've always honestly just personally wondered about that, because I myself am not a game developer. So I wonder, like, once you get that art style and everything, like what else goes into the background to keep it fresh? But no, that makes a lot of sense. So it's kind of cool to think about. Just like when it comes to that, the nostalgia factor is, I guess, for older gamers, is that art that you see. And then the thing that makes it appealing to a wider audience are probably, like, you know, these quality of life.
Yeah, it's a really good question. Yeah, I still think about it a lot. I don't understand how, like, some of the biggest games at the moment, like, I don't know, like Undertale and stuff like that, like, how, you know what I mean? Like, it's so old school looking, but it just does so well. So yeah, it's just cool. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the only other place, the only other place outside of games that I see a lot of pixel art now, at least online, are NFTs. So,
that's a whole other conversation.
Right. So that's, I'm like, maybe that is how, like, the younger audience is used.
Oh dear, I hope not. Oh, they see a character, like, oh, it's a character from NFT, inspired by NFT art. No, I don't like it.
Yeah, I can't even begin to understand NFTs at all. I'm totally aged out of that. But, like, I have been seeing a lot of pixel art NFTs, and I'm like,
yeah, same.
So now I honestly, like, side tangent, sometimes I don't know when I'm looking online if someone is, like, showing game development art. You know, I look at, like, your Twitter account, and you post your pixel art, and it's showing the animation and everything. And then I'll see someone else, and I'm like, is this person making a game, or are they just selling?
Yeah, the lines are blurred. And now there's, like, NFT gaming too. Like, that's, like, blowing up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
It's definitely interesting, but I have no idea about it.
I'm shaking my head thinking about this NFT.
Yeah, but, you know, that's super interesting. And, you know, this is probably a great place for a break. So we'll be back in 1 second.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So kind of moving on to, like, the game development and some of your creative processes. So one thing I always, you know, like to do on the show is talk with devs about their creative process, mainly because I'm dealing with smaller studios and solo developers that tend to be a bit scrappy in order to bring their visions to life. So my question for you is, you're no exception to this. It's like, as the head of a small but mighty studio, you wear many hats, you know, while completing this project specifically, from being the lead developer to the pixel artist and 2D animator for Berserk Boy. It must feel like you're getting pulled in a million different directions. As someone who is on both the creative and technical sides of this project, how do you find the balance in regards to big creative ideas that might slow the project down, and less exciting technical requirements, you know, that add a little bit of that polish or quality of life and help build out the overall gaming experience?
That's another awesome question. Yeah, I mean, it's something that really goes under the rug, I think, as well, when people talk about how games are made. Like, I feel like cutting and, like, the pre-planning, knowing about your scope is so important to actually, like, make your game. So, like, yeah, I guess with adding stuff in, it's super fun to just keep adding stuff in when you're prototyping. But with us, we always know we have deadlines and milestones we have to hit during development. So, like, we need to, like, talk to ourselves, hey, is this crucial to add into the game, or can we just, like, add that crazy effect in later? So, I guess it's super important to focus on the core game first. And then I'd say it's the best way to deal with things. And having, like, a well-documented plan of attack in your design documents is what helps us, like, stay on track with and not going, like, totally out of scope and, like, feature creeping every day. But I guess scope is just what helps us stay on track. We have a scope, we have a milestone deadline, we have weeks planned out. And if we focus more on the core gameplay than, like, too much juice, because it's just like, yeah, we can add that in at the end, but we can't just make a bit of a game at the end when it's too late, I guess.
Right. So do you find you are the person that keeps that balance going for the entire team? Like, you're making sure that there's not that creep? Or do you ever find yourself like really being pulled by, like, you know, the creative side or the technical side?
Oh, it's so bad, because I want to say, like, yeah, I am that guy who keeps things on track, but then it's like, I'll be that guy for like 2 months, and then like I'll have an idea, and I'll be like, all right, we're doing this. And it's just like a bit of both, you know. Obviously, you have, everyone has cool ideas, right? And it's just like, I wonder what it'd look like. But yeah, I do have to like rein it in, or it'll just go on forever. Like, I worked on a game before, and it was going for like 4 years, and we didn't get out like the prototype phase. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So we just like learned, like, just stop adding features after a certain point.
Yeah. There was actually like the first episode, I interviewed a 2-person game studio in Canada, and their creative director, he was like, yeah, I'm normally just throwing out ideas all the time. He's like, I like literally can't stop. And the other member of the team is his wife. And he's like, if it wasn't for her, I would probably like just have a game that was loaded down with features that were like incomplete.
So relatable.
So my next question is, like, are there any elements that won't make it into the final release, whether those are, you know, technical or creative, that you really had your heart set on?
Yeah, there are definitely things that won't, either like they're completely cut, or we just like tweaked it a bit to just like fit in. Those ideas aren't like game changing. They're just like little things here and there. Like, if I had it my way, I would have had 25 more bosses or something, or something crazy, but it's just not doable. nothing too major. I feel like it did go well, but if anyone tells you they got everything in, they're lying.
Oh yeah, that is honestly what I've come to understand from talking to so many creatives. It's like, there's always a laundry list of things that just don't make it into the final project.
You ask us questions, making me sad, thinking about all this stuff. That's not it.
I've seen some devs who are like, yeah, I have like whole notebooks full of just ideas that didn't make it into a game that I could make another game out of.
Yeah, that's always good. I guess you can take those ideas into like future games or updates or whatever, but yeah, painfully true.
Okay, so the next thing I want to move on to, and I think it's like a very defining element of this style of game, is the music. And so, you know, as a lover of indie and retro style games, like I said, the element that stands out most to me is the music that, you know, pops up in this game, in these types of games. It's like this high energy, like chiptune tracks that like really set the mood and make you as a player feel like you're the hero of the story, battling your way to the end of the game. So my question for you is, one of the things that really stands out in Berserk Boy is the retro inspired soundtrack from T. Lopez, who produced the Sonic Mania soundtrack. So how did you come to meet a composer from one of your favorite franchises? Because I thought that was interesting when I was doing some research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, wow. T's amazing, right? He's so good. Well, I mean, he's really good on like Berserk Boy as well, and it's super fun to work with him. But how we met is pretty not that extravagant. It was like it was on social media. We just had like a small back and forth on like a picture or a video of Berserk Boy that was floating around on the internet. He said something like, "This game looks cool," and I was like, "Yo, I love your music." And then, like, after a bit of chatting, I was like, "Hey, do you want to work on Berserk Boy?" That's pretty much it. Just like, you know what? I might as well just ask. That's it, really.
That's awesome, though. Like, you know, how many people can say, like, they've come across, you know, someone who's worked on a very nostalgic and very important franchise to them. Mm-hmm. And that person is also just like, yeah, I'll work on your project, too.
Yeah, it's super cool.
Like, that is the ultimate collab. Like, just like as a side hobby, I talk about music a lot on the show too, because like I do a lot of music production.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
And it's like, this is just like kind of that ultimate internet collab that I think a lot of producers fantasize about. Like, oh, there's going to be this like major artist that I'm familiar with who somehow stumbles upon my my music and then collaborates with me, and I'm like, this kind of happened that way. So that's really awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of true.
And like, honestly, just the music and the trailer to the game will get you hooked. So like, anybody listening right now, pause the episode and go and watch just like the trailer for this game. The music is so good and it fits so well. Like, you get that nostalgic feeling right away.
Yeah, for sure.
And so after meeting T, was there like a specific sound that you wanted him to try on the project? And how did you both kind of come to an agreement on the final music and selection for the game?
So like at the start, we would just like chat about like references and like the general direction of the game. And I'd send him like, oh, this is the current narration. Like, this was happening in this scene. And then like, I didn't actually really know what to expect, but T would just be like, oh, let me whip you up something. And then I'd just be like, yes, okay, let's do it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not normally like that with work. It's normally like, I want to say no a couple of times first, but yeah, T just, yeah, he's really good with this style of music. And just, yeah, he's been doing his own thing really, like just like a bit of direction with artwork or a bit of direction with like the mood or like the lore of what's going on at the moment. And then yeah, T will just like create his own track and it'll be great, which is really good to work with. Yeah, it's low stress.
Oh, I bet.
It's just like, yeah, he's like, oh, here we are.
And so did he ever send like, I don't even know if this is possible in a game, but did you ever send too much music and you found that you had to like choose between some really good tracks, or was everything he did in there?
Oh, you know, you say that there were some things that, not because of the music, but because of how the game shifted, we cut some like a little scenes out, and we, yeah, there have been a few of those moments, but he is doing like remix tracks as well of each of the stages, so I think it'll make up for it. So it's no problem. You won't be missing out on any T Lopes bangers on In Berserk Boy. It's all good.
Nice. So will there also be a soundtrack released with the game too?
Yeah. There'll be a digital soundtrack, I think. I don't know about physical yet, but yeah, definitely there'll be digital soundtrack.
Okay. Awesome. And so like kind of heading towards the end of the interview, I've got two final questions for you. And these are the questions that I normally like to ask anyone that does come on the podcast, because I work with, I interview a lot of like either solo or smaller studios. So what advice would you have for aspiring indie developers and creatives looking to like blaze their own path in the industry? Is the first question I have for you.
So I'd say just number one is like the cliche, don't give up. And if you're feeling like you're burnt out, take a break. I think something important to do is reach out to content creators or game developers that you're a fan of, and do a lot of like research in your spare time to stay inspired, because like that helps you like keep the spark alive, right? Do a lot of things that involve you not sat hunched over your computer all day, because that's also like a way to kill your drive. So like, be healthy with your work, I guess, and don't overscope your project. Just don't overscope it, take it simple, and yeah, that's it really. Just yeah.
All right. Okay. And then my final question for you is, you know, now that you're on the brink of releasing this passion project, what's up next for you in your studio? And are you currently working on any other game ideas?
Yeah, actually we are. We started concepting some real cool stuff. And I started making some early artwork of the next project whenever I get a chance, but like, you know, messing with some design ideas, but literally nothing's finalized at the moment. It's literally going from like every direction, you know, like,
yeah,
maybe you should make a shmup, maybe you should make a RPG. Yeah, it's like that. It's really everywhere at the moment. So,
okay. So we will be seeing some more work from the studio in the future though.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Awesome. So thank you for coming on the show. Right now is the portion of the show where like please plug all of your work. Tell people where they can play Berserk Boy when it comes out, where to get your Discords, you know, join your Discord server, the whole nine yards.
Oh, cheers, mate. And also, thanks for having me. I've had a lot of fun on it. It's
Well, good.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm Zoo. I'm working on Berserk Boy. And if you'd like to help and support us, you can follow us on Twitter at Berserk Boy Game. Something that really helps us out is wishlisting on Steam. We have a demo at the moment. You can give that a whirl. Also, we have a Discord page that's called Berserk Boy Games. But yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Oh yeah, thank you. Awesome. Thank you. This was very fun. I look forward to playing the game.
Cheers, mate.
And with that, we've wrapped up this episode of Those Who Play Create. If you've enjoyed the show, please follow, rate, and review it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you choose to listen. Stay up to date with the Lore Party Podcast Network by connecting with us on Instagram and Twitter and Twitch at lore_party. If you're in the game industry and would like to appear on the show, shoot me a message on Twitter at produced_by_LK. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.